Welcome back to a special episode of the Freedom Train Podcast Series. I am Joseph Ward. I want to give a shout out to my homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. He's working behind the scenes on this one. So we kind of put this one together very quickly because this is a pressing matter that we need to talk about in these Tallahassee streets. So we're getting into it. So before I introduce my guest and we get into the information and have our conversation that's much needed, I want to remind you that the Freedom Train Podcast Series is brought to you by PACS, Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PACS, Inc. is a Black development organization aimed at developing the Black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with a trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit the website at www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the organization, how you yourself can become a part of the organization, or you can donate to the organization, how you can learn the code of conduct, how you can get involved in the different initiatives they have. Also, take advantage of the Learning Center. And if you want to support PACS, Inc., you can support PACS, Inc. by visiting their store tab or going to AmazonSmile.com or clicking the Amazon Smile logo on the PACS, Inc. website. The Amazon Smile program basically is a program where you can sign up with Amazon Smile by going to AmazonSmile.com. And as you register, you get to pick a nonprofit organization that you want to support. A portion of your proceeds will go to that organization. So every time you buy something, just buy willy-nilly like you always do. Keep them boxes coming. Just type in PACTSINC and support the nonprofit organization. So that's how we're doing. And remember to visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about myself, Mr. Patrick Irvin, Enigma September, Queen Candace, Queen Shelby, and Cliff, everybody that's on the Freedom Train Network. And we got some new stuff coming. So y'all just sit back and relax and just open your mind up because you're about to get bombarded. Because remember, this is media designed to free your mind. All right. So they tripping out here in these Tallahassee streets. All right. So I'm going to do this introduction by giving a bit of a backstory with context information so you all understand why we're having this conversation. The word is gentrification. And if you don't know what gentrification is, quickly, it's when an undesired population is removed from an area one way or another, and the area is redesigned or remodeled, quotations, and then a more desired population is moved into this area. So here in Tallahassee, we have a historic community called Frenchtown. We had a historic community called Smoky Hollow, and we had several other historic communities in Tallahassee that were subject to gentrification. Luckily, Frenchtown still exists, but Frenchtown used to be the Black, or one of the Black hubs in Tallahassee for Black people. But now Frenchtown is just a community, so where its survival is not more so, it's not more self-sufficient like it used to be, but more so off of others. Smoky Hollow doesn't exist anymore. It's a park called Cascades Park. It was gone in the 60s. And other neighborhoods have been demolished or revitalized. And there's a community in Tallahassee called Goodbread. And Goodbread is one of those revitalized communities. It used to be, we used to call it the Fourth Avenue Projects. I can't remember the original name of it, but we used to call it the Fourth Avenue Projects. And in that community, the undesired population was removed and a more desired population was brought in. So we come now to a place that's in all of our hearts. I grew up on the south side of Tallahassee. This the Orange Avenue apartments, what we affectionately call South City. It's a hub within itself within Tallahassee, and South City is subject to be revitalized. So my guest here, she's a beacon in the community, Tallahassee native. Her father is one of the men who were in our community fighting for our community way before our time. She was able to learn from her father and pick up the mantle and create her own path for herself in these Tallahassee streets. She has experience as a model. She has experience in the magazine industry. She has experience as an entrepreneur. She has a brand called, don't let me say it wrong, a walking brand. Did I say it right? A walking brand, yes. So a walking brand. And I love this brand because it's about community. It's about bringing people together, doing different activities, going to the movies, having the girls' day out, fashion shows, all these different things that she galvanizes people in the community. She brings people together. And she's fighting for veterans to receive the services and the and just all of the resources that they need. And she really spends all of her time in the community fighting for other people. So we say, you know what? Let's make sure we join you in the fight and have a place for you to come and let people know what's going on in the community. So I want y'all to put y'all hands together for Miss Tiffany Hill.
Thank you so much, Joseph. I really appreciate you and all that you do with the Freedom Train Network. It is a great platform. And I really appreciate you for having me on today to speak about, you know, South City. Because that is near and dear to my heart. And, you know, just public housing alone is really near and dear to my heart. And what some people, I don't think that they realize, is that I actually had managed two low-income housing complexes for Goodwill Industry Big Ben. And over on Ross Road, they have housing over there. So I actually was the manager of those houses. So, you know, I just wanted to put that out there. So when people hear me speak, or, you know, the reason why I'm speaking against certain things when it comes to housing is because not only did I live in public housing, I watched my father start one of the first resident organizations, you know, that got recognized, is the only recognized national resident organization in the nation, national.
Right.
And that my dad, you know, coming up, we were his readers. You know, they didn't have scan and reader systems back then. So when we were coming up, and he started a business and started going to all these different meetings and having to know, like, learn the policies and regulations for HUD, we were his readers. And thankfully, my dad is like a sponge. So once he hears something and learn it, you know, he is there, you know. And so, and he has cerebral palsy, you know, he has a disability and stuff. And so that's why this is a big near and dear to my heart, because I think some people forget that he is a tenant there, like he's a resident there. My sister is there as his caretaker. So, you know, sometimes people don't know what's below the waterline. They just assume, you know, because they so used to seeing people in a different light.
Right. Well,
yeah.
So check this connection, though. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I grew up, actually, I'm my mom's caretaker. She has a disability. She's getting older. It's you can kind of see it. So she actually lives in the Goodwill Apartments on Roberts Avenue.
Okay.
So growing up over here, because I moved back to be able to help her. And so growing up over here, I saw the issues. And even now as an adult, seeing the issues. And she's like, she's the version of your father over here. She's the voiceover. She's the only one willing to stand up and fight. But you're talking about tenant rights. You're talking about human rights, and people won't believe how elder handicapped people are neglected. People won't. So if people in that position could be neglected, persons who are not in those positions, they will also be neglected.
Exactly. That is true. And that's why it's important for families to stand up for their family members that are in, you know, public housing, or there are persons with disabilities, because, you know, as well as I do, Joseph, like when the whole thing first starts, it's like, oh, you know, we want you all involved. We want your input. And they have all these meetings to kind of try to check off boxes, you know what I mean? And then they have all these people that are from not nowhere near the South Side, you know, come in and they're
everybody got an opinion.
Input, right. And they're putting in their input and everything and stuff. And so as time moves on, it's like an onion, you know, there's layers and the layers mm-hmm. start pulling back. And then you start really seeing like, wait a minute, you said that you were replacing 200 of these units. You said that people will have the right to return. If they want to come back, they can come back. That's what was put out many times in the meetings.
Right, right.
The other questions that were asked was, well, can y'all rehab them? I mean, because I think there wasn't like, you know, Macomb Street, which is now Good Bread. But is there a way to rehab these? Because I know, like, let's go back to the 70s when they were built. These mm-hmm. units are 50 years old. And so when they were built, to me, the historical moment is that they were one of the finished complexes that actually had a desegregation, you know, there. Because when we moved there, you know, according to my dad, there was white families living there.
Right.
And then the black people started moving in. And so, of course, you know, when black people start moving in, they started moving out. Yeah. So you have to wonder, like, some of the designs of the buildings, you know, like what made them make Orange Avenue look the way it looks, because it's very unique. You know, it's the only apartment complex here in Tallahassee that goes from a one bedroom all the way up to a five bedroom, and it's not fenced all the way in. It's just, it blends in with the community.
Right.
And so when the white people, you know, decided that, hey, you know, basically I'm not living with all these black people, and they moved, then, you know, it's like, okay, now we have to fight for the housing authority to do what they're supposed to do as far as maintenance and treating people fairly, and someone stepping in and saying, hey, y'all got to get your kids under control. You know what I mean? So it was a lot back then, but there was family, you know, a family mentality. We all stood together. You know what I mean? So parents were more active in the community. Parents were more boisterous, you know, when things were wrong. I mean, just look at how back then they took our school bus away because they said that we were within a 2-mile walking distance. But they didn't take into consideration that the route that we had to take was very unsafe. It was unsafe. And back then, people didn't have to keep their dogs on leashes and stuff like that. So we were being chased by dogs, snakes, you know, popping up. So, you know, my dad actually had to have someone to drive his car to even slow down the traffic that was coming down Magnolia Road, because people just didn't care, you know.
And that's usually how it is.
Yeah. So it was just crazy of the stuff that we had to deal with back then, you know, to the point where they were like, you know what, we're not putting our kids in danger, you know, like that.
So let's, for those who don't know, because it's going to be some people who are not from the Tallahassee area who really don't know the story. So let's kind of take them back to the beginning and kind of fill them in on, okay, what's happening with the Orange Avenue apartments? Why are they up for revitalization? What are some of the things that are being, that have been said about the revitalization, and what's really happening to the people during this supposed revitalization?
Okay, so in the beginning, it was we going to do a redevelopment of Orange Avenue apartments, mm-hmm. Just to make them better, upgrade them by replacing them, demolishing them. So they had a company that they found out of Atlanta. They took people on little tours to different, you know, they went to Atlanta and all these different things, and said, oh yeah, this is just, we getting an idea and some feedback on how do people feel about, you know, the way the community is gonna look. So we want everybody's input. So you go to these meetings and they have pictures on the wall of examples of what the buildings can look like and what the community can look like and all this stuff. So they have the Columbia Residential Company come in, and everybody went around and put like little red and green dots. Well, it was a mixture of things. So when you look around, like a lot of the examples that people chose were like townhome style, kind of in the same format of what it is now, but just more. You get what I'm saying? And so they were like, oh yeah, this is great. And so they had many, many meetings. And then as time go by, it's like you start noticing that things are sounding a little different. And people started asking like, okay, so what's gonna happen when it's time to move? Well, they're offering Section 8 vouchers to those who want Section 8 vouchers, but on the same hand, they were saying, but if you want to come back, because that's what people were asking, well, what if I don't want to take no voucher? You know, what if I want to stay here? You know, stay in this area. I like this area. What if I want? Oh, well, you'll have the right to return.
I remember that.
Right. And so it was like, okay, so what does that mean? Oh, so that means everybody, you know, if you want to come back, you know, you'll have that right to come back. Well, moving forward, that's really not the case because they're turning it into a mixed use. And they were saying, oh, we want a mixed use community because they feel like if you bring in somebody who's making a higher income, they can set an example for those that are on low income.
No, but
And
that's
I'm
cultural
like,
incompetence.
exactly. So I'm like, wow, that's interesting. And that was said actually moving even more closer to this future. Later they came back and there was a meeting one night and they said, oh, this is a big secret. We don't want anybody to put it out yet because we're gonna do a public announcement on tomorrow. So you had the senator, what's her name? Miss Osley, Senator Osley was there. So was the executive director of Tallahassee Housing Authority, Brenda Williams, was there. And so Senator Osley came out and she was like, yeah, well, you know, Orange Avenue just became got approved to be a purpose-built community. And
So what does that mean?
right. And so everybody was looking around like, what purpose-built? What is that? You know, like they didn't even forewarn the people that this is what they were doing. And they had to apply for that purpose-built a while back, because when you do research like I do, you kind of see where, oh, this particular area right here, which Tallahassee was dead smack in the middle of it, had applied for purpose built. And that's why they were taking people up to Atlanta, because Atlanta has a purpose built community, right?
So let me ask with that. Who were the people that were selected to be taken to Atlanta to see these communities?
It was, I know my dad was one that went, and there were some other tenants. You know, they did take some tenants up there with them. And so some tenants, you know, they were like, oh, they were nice, you know, whatever. But of course, you know, my dad is like, I want to see the other side. I want to speak to some people. And that's not what happened. They just went and kind of did a tour.
Okay, they kept it very controlled.
Right,
Okay,
exactly.
okay. So,
Exactly.
they have this group of people going to Atlanta to see these purpose-built communities, but at the same time, they've already applied to make Orange Avenue a purpose-built community, and nobody knows until this lady just comes and reveals it.
There you go. And you know what? It's sad because they have a resident organization in Orange Avenue. And you know, when you read HUD regulations and laws and policies, you know, they're supposed to keep people inform, the tenants inform, because the resident organization is the one that kind of like speaks out for the people. That's why they elect folks to be that, you know, the speakers for them, you know. And so they were so used to that, that a lot of people, you know, they just didn't bother about saying anything. But they kind of did a smoking screen on that one, Joseph. And the crazy part is that I was there in Atlanta when they started doing that. I have people that I know that were in a predicament where they were given Section 8 vouchers to just move. But at that time, people started, they found out that it was folks from this particular project area that was, that they gave vouchers to. And so what was happening is that the private owners on Section 8 started pulling their house off the market. Cause they were like, oh no, we not renting to somebody who was in the projects, like, especially not over there. You know what I mean? Right. So they were pulling houses off the market. Some people felt like, you know, they were really doing like background checks and all of that. So they have that option that I'm not renting.
Right. So Purpose Built Communities is a whole nonprofit organization.
Purpose Built, actually, I don't even really know what they are. I think they're part of, they try to get approved, like, it's weird what they are. They do have mixed income, but they offer like tax credit, like tax credit, market rate, you know, that type of stuff, rent.
Right. Cause I just Googled Purpose Built Communities and I came upon purposebuiltcommunities.org.
Right.
And I see they have a map of different places. It says we're driven by a collective desire to advance communities and improve the lives of residents as we help set a new course toward a more radical, equitable, and just society. So they have a marker over Tallahassee, and it says Tallahassee South City Foundation, and it says click to learn more. Say
yeah. So the South City Foundation, you know, that's here.
Right.
That's Ms. Courtney Atkins, who's like, I guess she's like the director. I know, I think Senator Osley was on there. And I believe Christique is a part. I don't know, she's still a part of South City Foundation, you know, like
different people. Right. So you got this whole organization and this whole process happening for the residents on the South Side. The residents have no idea about the whole underlining things that's happening with the South City. Well, I want to say South City Foundation, but with the Purpose Built Community. So how were the residents first informed that this process is about to happen to their community?
As far as it being a purpose built community?
Well, just the revitalization as a whole.
Oh, well, they actually put out notices and said that they were having, you know, meetings about redevelopment of Orange Avenue. That's how it started. It was like a revitalization of Orange Avenue, know, of South City. And so, and then it went from there until like one night in a meeting, oh, we got approved for Purpose Built. And then the next day they actually did an interview, or they published it, you know, they were on the news talking about Orange Avenue became a purpose-built community.
Right. Okay. So, the last time I was at Orange Avenue, when I went to the community center, you could see the pictures on the wall of what they want to turn the community into. And it looks like the college housing that we see here in Tallahassee. It doesn't look like something that the current residents will really be invited back to.
Right. Yeah, right. And that's true. And we asked at that time, you know I asked Brenda Williams about, you know, is there any chance that this design can be changed? Because I don't see where there's four and five bedrooms. You know, is there any way that the design can be changed? Because I don't recall anybody wanting it to be stacked up and looking like College Town.
Right.
And really, you know, at the commissioner meeting, they showed a full rendering of what it would look like. And honestly, it looks like a upgraded Fourth Avenue is what it looks like.
Right. It does.
It really looks like an upgraded Fourth Avenue. And even, you know, my cousin who was there to speak at the city commission meeting, she said the same, you know, she said, yeah, she said it looks like Fourth Avenue. And I thought, like, back in the 70s, they were trying to get rid of the barrack style housing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, like when places are closed in, you're just asking for trouble.
The mentality is different. It's been proven.
Yes. And then in the middle of, you know, there's still a pandemic going on, but you want to build buildings that are not COVID-19 or any other type of pandemic friendly. Right now, the community is, you know, pandemic friendly because you're not walking out into a hallway worried about somebody coughing in the hallway. And then that whole hallway is pretty much going to be infected. Right.
Right.
Yeah. So,
even the way the community moves, because, you know, what us doing community work, we're more cautious of us bringing COVID into the community than actually getting COVID in the community, because they're so isolated and they stated themselves and they don't really go too far. And so everything is within that community. So, I mean, it's unfortunate that this whole process is happening. So how are the residents or how are community members fighting back against this supposed revitalization? What are some steps that people are taking to try to preserve as much or try to fight it as much as possible?
Well, first of all, I think that there's only a few people, to include myself, that are doing a lot of research, that are working behind the scenes and even speaking out.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the community, like, we hear the complaints, like they say, oh, everybody's so happy that they're going to get these Section 8 vouchers and all this kind of stuff. And we're hearing some of the other people, you know, they like to say, oh, there's only 10 people that are having an issue or what have you. But 10 people still have a voice, you know, because they live there, you know. And so you're going to discount the 10 people versus, you know, the rest of the people who just may be afraid to say anything because they won't fear retaliation.
Well, you and I understand the inner workings of what happens within the community. And like I mentioned earlier, like what happens out here with my mom, there are a lot of issues that need to be addressed. I keep telling them, hey man, you're elder and disabled, go Facebook Live, that junk go viral quick, right? Mm-hmm. You can stand up for yourself, but most people won't, out of fear of, well, if I do this, well, what's going to happen to me? Or will I lose my house? Or I don't have anywhere else to go. And that fear gets hung over those people's head.
Mm-hmm.
So you have 10 people. Who was listening to these 10 people besides you? That's crazy.
Nobody.
That's crazy.
Nobody. They're not listening because, you know, they don't see they're saying now that, oh, well, you know, the residents, they're not coming out. They're not saying anything. Well, the resident organization, you know, is the one that, you know, my dad was trying to speak and tell you all, but Ms. Williams was so hard on her own personal, you know, vendetta or whatever she got against the resident organization and was saying that they were non-compliant and all of this, which turned out that, you know, it kind of backfired on her because, you know, she actually owed them an apology because they were not non-compliant. And the housing authority actually owes them tenant participation funds back, you know, so they don't want to talk about that. And she don't want to talk about how, you know, what I don't understand is how this city is so quick to give an organization money to fund an organization who really is supposed to stand for public housing, who really supposed to fight for these. They're supposed to be the ones fighting for the people. But these outside companies or the CRA or whoever is dumping all this money, the city, the state, what have you, is dumping all this money onto the housing authority, letting them do it when the housing authority actually owes HUD money for misuse of housing funds. So that's just like, let's say just this is just like you owe back rent, but you want to move in this house. So okay, I'm gonna go ahead and give you this house and let you go on about your business. But that's not how it works, you know, because you want to dangle this Section 8 voucher in front of some of these people's faces. But mind you, some people are still behind trying to catch up on their rent.
Well, that's what I was just thinking about, because we know the game, we know the tricks. So you have these meetings at specific times of the day on specific days where you know most people can't make it. Like the people, most of the people who are the outspoken people who stand up for the community, they can't really make those meetings. Why? Because they're usually at work, right? Usually at work, maybe in school or something. So they know what they're doing when they have these meetings at these specific times. So you may have somebody who actually really cares, who can accurately articulate what's going on, who can come to the meeting, but they're in the minority because the other people who support them aren't there because they're at work. And it's like, well, why don't y'all, if y'all really care that the community members are there, change the time of the meetings, like make the meetings more accessible, like take advantage of this technology and all these different things that you can do with these meetings instead of having these meetings the way you have them. Because continuing to do that means you don't really care. You want to keep the status quo going. I mean, we're not crazy.
It is. And they know that a lot of the people there don't have computers or may not be computer savvy. You know, some people may not even be able to read, but that's not their concern. Their biggest thing is, oh, we're gonna give you a Section 8 voucher and you can go anywhere in the nation that you want. And but they don't know that. Okay, well, you got to qualify for the Section 8 voucher. You still have to qualify for that. You can't be behind on your rent. So, because you won't get a voucher. And then, even if you do get a voucher, you need to go ahead and decide where you want to live at. If you want to move to a different state, a different county, they have their own set of rules. It's not like you're just going to go there and you're going to get in. And it says that right on the Housing Authority website when it speaks about Section 8 vouchers, it's called plotting. And plotting is when you take a voucher and you move from one area and you want to go to a different city, right? So when you go there, their housing list is closed. Like they're already trying to get their people, you know, into places. They may not have nothing available for you because of your family size. But if you're not being educated about all of that, if they're saying, oh, if we're asking them, well, do you have a relocation plan? No, they do not have a relocation plan. And that is what is one aspect of what they're supposed to have. They are supposed to have, according to HUD policy, you are supposed to have a relocation. If we asked you that question back in September, because we did a public response, if we asked that question in September and then just asked the same question about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, and you still have the same answer as no, we don't have a relocation plan. But then you put out notices recently that, oh, we got money for phase one, we got money for phase two. And so your prediction was to we're going to start moving people in June next month, right? But the thing is, according to HUD regulations and policies, you're supposed to give a 90-day notice. So the lawyer that I took my dad's letter to contacted them was like, you're wrong. You can't do that. And so they did a letter to let everyone know that they have to give you a 90-day notice, and that they cannot demolition the place until everyone has a place to live.
Right.
Like, they are relocated, right? And so me and, my sister, hey, boots on the ground, passing out the notices to everybody. And as I was passing them out, people were asking, "Well, what is this?" And so I was explaining to them, "Well, this is your right. This is what you need to know." And it was like, "Oh, so we have to find our own place?" I was like,
Yeah.
"Well, yeah." I said, "Did they not tell you that? Are you not getting the one-on-one consultation that you're supposed to get?" No, they didn't tell us anything. That, we keep wondering when we're gonna get the Section 8 vouchers, but they're not telling us. They don't know. One minute it's like they got funded, and next minute they didn't. It's confusing. We don't know nothing.
See,
That's basically what you
and see,
hear.
I hate that because just that word confusion. When you, because come on, these people know if they push hard enough and confusion comes in, then people are going to get aggravated with it and just say forget it and not really go for it like they want to. And that's why somebody like you, an advocate like you, needs to be there, because there needs to be a case management system set up in this. Now, it needs to be somebody who can help them through the process, right? I mean, it's we can you clearly see people being taken advantage of and their homes being ripped away from them, because when you're talking about, okay, we're gonna relocate you and you have this amount of time to relocate, but all right, where are the people going?
Right. I mean, some people were actually moved into Orange Avenue from Good Bread when they did the whole Good Bread thing. So you already have people that have migrated from Macomb Street,
To
which is
good
now
bread.
Good Bread,
Right.
to Orange Avenue. Some people are probably were probably already on the Section 8 waiting list, but because the public housing came available first, of course, you're gonna take that option and you're gonna wait, because you need a place to stay. So you're gonna sit there until that list comes open. So yes, I'm gonna be happy to go back to, let's say, if somebody was from Daytona, for
Yeah.
some reason, family stuff or whatever, they
That's
came
what I'm
here.
thinking as well. You might have a
Right.
lot of people moving out of the city. Some people
Exactly.
may be moving into other, like Joe Louis and some, but some of these places they may not have room.
Yeah, and they don't want to move into, if you ask any of them, do they want to go to Joe Louis, they're gonna tell you no. They don't want to go. I mean, because when you give people options to move and stuff, like, it can kind of cross into a civil rights thing, because in the HUD regulation as well, it's like, you're in your relocation plan, you're not supposed to be trying to push, like, if black people into a predominantly black area. That's not what you're supposed to
Right.
be
You let them
doing,
choose where they want to go.
right? That is breaking the law. You're not really supposed to do that. You're supposed to help them to advance and move out into other areas that are not heavily populated with their own race, and that's what they're doing. And we as black people, we have a curse and a good thing about us. We are hustlers, and we will just say, you know what, whatever, I'm just gonna do A, B, C, and D. We'll keep it moving forward, right? But that is our curse. This is the time where we need to say, no, we're not about to be pushed out, and you guys don't have no plan for us. You don't know where I'm going. I have a 4-bedroom house with all my kids. Where am I going? Where am I going to find that's going to be reasonable, even if you gave me a Section 8 voucher?
Right.
What 4 and 5 bedroom house out there or owner is renting a 4 and 5 bedroom
That's
house
affordable.
that's affordable?
Okay.
Those houses are running like $3,000.
I mean, because it's one thing to have the voucher to be able to get into the place, but can you be able to maintain in the place over time the way you was in South City? Because that's the thing. You were staying in South City for income reasons. So if you take these people out of these areas, because we all know the price of living, the cost of living in Tallahassee is rising. It's not what it used to be. So, if those of us who are not low income, who are like, man, we're looking at these prices crazy, the cost of living crazy. Imagine the people who are low income. So
Exactly.
that's
I mean,
wild.
think of us that, can afford to go out and look for a house to buy. Right now, the sellers, it's a seller's market. The housing market sucks for somebody who's looking for a place to buy right now, but and then it's supposed to ensure that when the people do move and when you get these vouchers, that they're moving into a safe place. You
Right.
know, they supposed to ensure that. And not only that, the executive director, Ms. Williams, keeps saying, oh, we're gonna move, we're gonna move everybody, we're gonna move them. Well, what is the restriction on the mileage? Like, how many miles are you moving people to? Or if I wanna go to California, because the majority of my family have migrated to California now. Are you gonna pay for them to move my stuff to California? Because you're not putting a limit on it. And if you think about it, Joseph, think about this. You know how the government went after all these colleges that were misleading and saying, okay, when you complete school, we're gonna guarantee you'll get a place, a job, right? And come to find out that was not happening. They were not providing job assistance or any of that stuff. They were just saying, thank you very much. Here's your degree and you're out of here, right?
Right.
And so this kind of reminds me of that. Oh, we're going to give you a voucher. You can go anywhere at any time. There's at least about 50 to 100 units available. This is what's being said.
Wow.
And let me ask you this, Joseph, and I'm gonna give you a scenario, okay?
Right.
So if you and I, we're having a conversation. I moved into this house. Maybe I bought the house 10 years ago, right? But this house is 50 years old. It's a red brick house, solid, whatever. It is 50 years old. I moved in 10 years. And so I tell you, oh, Joseph, my house is just, oh, it just look like it's just falling apart. And sometimes I get up and I'm just stepping in water. And but I ain't did nothing in the 10 years that I've been here. Well, nothing was done to them, done to it like 50 years, for 50 years now. So, I just don't know. What are you gonna say to me as a friend? As
Like,
a
man,
friend, let's say that.
as a friend, I'm gonna tell you, hey, your problem not gonna fix itself. I mean, you have to do your part in ensuring that your stuff is taken care of. You have to be your advocate, and that's one of the things that really make me angry about. How a lot of people are taken advantage of, because people from these organizations, they've worked in these communities long enough. They know a lot of these people don't know how to advocate for themselves. So I'm gonna tell that person, hey man, you got to fight for you. You got to make sure that your house get fixed. If it's been over 50 years and nobody's done anything, they don't care. So you got to make them care. You got to care enough for yourself and others. And if you don't, it's going to keep getting worse and worse and worse. And they're going to keep taking advantage of you if you don't care. And
Exactly. Exactly. So when I hear the executive director for Tallahassee Housing Authority in a presentation, before city commissioners that says something on that same line, the apartment's been there for 50 years, they're falling apart. Tenants don't have to worry about waking up, stepping in water. Nothing's been, they haven't been rehabbed in 50 years. And you've been there for a while. So I think me as a city commissioner, if I was sitting up there, that will make a light bulb go off in my head and like, well, what in the hell have you been doing in the past time that you got there? Because when you got there, you had to see that something was changing and something just recently started changing because you have a apartment sitting up there that has, that has been burned since Hurricane Michael. And it's a 3-bedroom apartment, and it affected
Well,
the apartment next to it, and it's sitting there.
yeah, I keep telling people, look, man, these elected officials, we put them in, we can take them out. It's
Not with the housing authority, it comes different. And
well,
I
I
told
mean,
you.
like at least on commissioner level.
Oh, well,
Yeah. You know, make them be your advocate, make them do their job. But then again, they also understand that most people vote like they're in college. They just pick the popular person. And so we're not really putting people in that we really are sure that's going to fight for us. So a lot of these things here are happening and we're being left vulnerable. And it's something I really don't like. I've always been the person who I don't like to see people get picked on. I don't like to see people get stepped on. I don't like to see people get bullied. And always encouraging people to stand up and fight for yourself. Don't allow this to just happen because they're going to do whatever they can to make money off of this. They want to,
Exactly.
you know, their thing is to, because they've been encroaching on the South Side for a while. Like, I can't look. I'm gonna just say this. Look, some of you people out there, and some of you people who are not of our community, stop doing a micro gentrification. First of all, it's very disrespectful to come in somebody's community and then you just gonna rename it for yourself. That's been a colonization trick since the beginning. Right. It's the South. It's not SoMo. It's the South Side. Either say it right or stay where you from, right? Stop coming into our neighborhood trying to bring your stuff into our neighborhood as if you don't know where you at. Because when we come in y'all neighborhoods, we respect y'all stuff. Come in our neighborhoods and respect. Don't be trying to make us change what we got going on for you all. But for us as well. If it's ours, we need to treat it like it's ours and take care of it for one, but also defend it. We got to.
We got to, Joseph. And people need to understand, they need to, folks always like to say, oh, stay woke. You need to stay woke. No, you need to wake up first.
Right.
You can't, you need to wake up in order to stay woke. And when you wake up, I need you to put your good glasses on so
Right.
you can really see what's going on around you. It's a whole bunch of smoke and screen. It's people, here that are very cliquish, and I call them click mongers.
Oh, we know,
And people that they're opportunists. And so they want to have their name on something just to say that they are a part of some type of project that they feel like is going to bring money. And everybody, people are like, oh, well, the real estate or the economy will go up, and it's like, oh, we create a job for, them to build the property. And I was like, but once the property is built, then what? You're taking $57 million, plus you're gonna ask for more money because now you said that the cost of the wood and all of that has gone up since COVID. But I'm like, okay, well, let's come back to the table and rethink what you're gonna do, because you keep ignoring the fact that the only thing you're saying is that, oh, there can't be rehab. Well, show me the numbers. Show me a company that you actually talked to. As a matter of fact, let us get the company that could come in, the engineers that can look and tell us what they can do. Because I know if I can go around the corner from where I live and see that Magnolia Terrace, a private public housing organization, have rehabbed that place and it looks very nice. And Mission Hills is another one that they did a lot of rehabbing. So you mean to tell me $57 million can't rehab that place? And then you can even add more to it. You get what I'm saying?
I mean, we heard when Southwood was brought up and they started building up Southwood. Remember the rumblings that, hey, first of all, they want a direct route to Southwood, but they want the route going towards Southwood to look like Southwood. And but it's only a few things in the way. South City is in the way, Hollyfield is in the way because they're redoing Rickards. They've already done the roundabouts. They're redoing Rickards now, and all the other things in that area going towards Southwood. And so everything needs to be uniform. And the only thing that can stop that is the people. And the people have to realize that we have the power. When they say all power to the people, that's real. The only it, it's like the Wizard of Oz or like the smoke and mirrors. You think these people have the power because they give you the illusion that they have power, but it's us who give them the power. And as long as we give them the power, they're going to keep using it against us to stay in power. It's not their job to empower us if they're in power. It's their job to stay in power. It's our job to empower us and take our power back.
Exactly. So well said. And it really is. I mean, we really need to come together, and that's why I was like, my campaign is hands across South City, because we need to have a voice. We need to start standing up. We need to make our voice loud enough to go to HUD National, which is in Washington, D.C. Forget about HUD and Jackson, all the little districts and THA and all that. They have their own agenda. We need to have our voices for HUD National, because public housing is needed. They want to get rid of, I mean, whether people want to believe it or not, but they're trying to wipe out all the public housing, and they want to make it mixed use, income. And it's like, I said before, you guys are letting all these contractors buy up these lands and stuff like that. Well, give them a ultimatum, like, hey, okay, you want to build here? Well, you're gonna have to at least carry at least this many Section 8 or public housing or persons with disability or something, because people with disabilities, if you really know somebody who receives a disability check and they get like $768 a month, how are they gonna survive off of that? Luckily, you do have, some tenants that have caregivers. And the caregivers, a lot of caregivers are sacrificing, to be there to take care, because, I mean, I don't know if I'm the only one who's seen some of these assisted living facilities,
They
but
horrible.
I'm not putting my dad in an
They
assisted
horrible.
living facility, right? But when he has an opportunity to be in public housing, because it's going to be more cost efficient for us as a family to take care of him or give him the best treatment necessary, then that's what we're going to do. And we're going to stand up and fight. And I don't care if I'm the last woman or person standing, I'm going to push this all the way up to Washington. I'm not going to stop trying to put it in the media to let them know that these people are being brainwashed. They're having a carrot dangled in their face, that these people are just creating smoke and mirrors. And all of these complexes are starting to look alike. They weren't even talking about the blueprint plan in the beginning, but now, I went to one of the housing authority commissioner meetings, and they were talking. Miss Williams was talking about she's trying to follow the stay on the schedule with the blueprint people. And so I'm like, okay, so that's why they throwing y'all money, because they want to make sure that you're staying on track with us. But guess what? HUD hasn't even signed off on your application. You haven't even submitted your application yet for demolition. So people just keep handing money and not even knowing if they're even going to get approved for it. So at this point in time, this is where the people really need to come out and make their voices heard to HUD National and say, hey, we need public housing, and we need for the housing authority to do right by the people here.
So how can people learn more about this? People who see this, they want to join the fight, they want to help, they want to reach out to you. How could people reach out to you and learn more about this and be able to join the fight?
Well, they can. There is you can follow me, reach out to me on my personal page, Tiffany Hill, on Facebook, and that's TIFANY, one F in my name, last name is Hill. Or you can follow me and reach me on Instagram, which is A Walking Brand. And so I'm always open to speak with people. And, you know, I'm going to be putting out a flyer with a community meeting that I'm going to be planning so that people can come out and hear all the information that we've been discussing today, and even, you know, whatever else may come up, you know. So we have to move on this fairly quick, you know, in order to get our voices heard in Washington, because that's where it's gonna mean a whole lot. That's where the buck is gonna stop or either keep going. But right. We need to at least have a dog in the fight.
Exactly, because it affects us the most. So yeah, we definitely need to have a dog in the fight. We definitely need to be a part of the fight, be fully informed of everything that's going down. So I'll make sure your Facebook link, your Facebook information, your IG information is in here. I'm gonna also put their links in the description for the Purpose Built Communities website. I also found some information on the effects of living in mixed income communities. So people can kind of look at that information and kind of see, because, you know, the first thing saying, these things are great, but you know.
They're not that great.
But I mean, this is a pressing issue in Tallahassee, and it's not just a Tallahassee issue. This is a nationwide issue, because we see gentrification happening all over the nation. We can talk to Black people in every city around the nation, and they'll talk about how they're being pushed out of their communities. Right. So the question is, what we gonna do about it? Are we really gonna sit back and allow ourselves to be pushed out of our communities that we've been in? Or are we gonna wake up, clean up, and stand up and make sure that we take over our communities and we direct in our communities and we save in our communities so we can have a place for our future to be? Because if not, we don't need to be out here like nomads looking for a place to stay, looking for communities. We Black people, we've been able to establish communities for the longest, and let's not let that stop. Let's fight for what's ours.
Yeah, and people think that, you know, if you look at Black Lives Matter, like how it started and where it is today, and the accomplishments that it has, you know, achieved, then, you know, these are Black lives too. So, you know, we matter, you know. Yep. Public housing matters to those who really can't afford the so-called affordable housing, which is really not affordable at all to, you know, according to some people's paychecks. So, you know, I appreciate again, Joseph, the opportunity to be on the Freedom Train Network.
Hey, no problem. Hey, let's make sure we follow up. I want to follow up with you. I want us to be able to sit down again in the future and see where we are, see where things going, and kind of track the progress of this, because this is an issue that we don't need to just let sweep be swept up under the rug, because we're already seeing them coming for other communities. We know they come from South City, and they come for the rest of them too. And like I say, these are our communities. Y'all ain't taking our communities.
Right, exactly. So if you could just hashtag Hands Across South City, let's get that going, and let's start making the stand.
Hashtag Hands Across South City. There it is, people. Freedom Train Podcast Series, www.freedomtrainradio.com. Hashtag Hands Across South City. Well, until next time. Oh, yeah, and remember, this is a special installment for our Black Women Celebration. And we celebrate you, Tiffany Hill, and other Black women in Tallahassee community and communities around the world who are standing up and fighting for their community. So it was, this conversation was fitting right in the middle of our Black Women Celebration Month. And so we're going to celebrate you in your fight and in all accomplishments that you have in your life. But we're also here to support and put our hard hats on and go to work.
So. That's right. Thank you, Joseph.
No problem. And I'll see everybody else next time. Peace out.